Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays on YouTube, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. Hey everybody, welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Burchie. Jacob's here.
Hey folks.
Hey, quick programming note up front. Couple of things I just want to point out. We'll be heading back to video on YouTube regularly very soon. We're just getting our office set up. Took me a little time to put all that stuff together. The other thing is, I've made this commitment in the past, but I'm making it now again. We're going to bring this show back to four times a month. Every single week, there should be a new episode of Ancast. Mm-hmm. I have been able to rearrange my schedule and my workflow a little bit to accommodate that. I have felt bad about how many episodes we missed this year due to just being too busy and not really having the time to put the show together every week. But I love this podcast, and I feel a little bad about the fact that we miss it frequently, like more than once a month. I really want to get away from that. I love doing this show, and I like to do it more. So I'm gonna commit to every single week for the foreseeable future, and I really feel like we can make that happen. So I want to thank everyone who stuck with us and stuck with the show for this long, and hopefully you'll be hearing from us a lot more. And hopefully you want that.
You won't be able to get enough of it.
Yeah, anyway. Hey, let's talk about some anime. I caught up on a bunch of stuff. Well, not really a bunch of stuff. I caught up on one thing, and I continued to watch another thing. Mm-hmm. Recovery of an MMO Junkie, is that what it's called?
Yes.
Kind of. I wonder if that's, like, does that mean that where it's is that where it's going? Do you think? Because it doesn't seem to be treating MMOs as anything other than this is a fact of life. It's a thing that people do.
Well, I mean, like, it's technically a recovery in that instead of using it as an escape, Moriko ends up accidentally using it as networking.
Yeah.
Because she keeps meeting people she knows, which is, you know, it's like, man, I just happen to know this guy works at the company, and this guy is an old work acquaintance. And
I wonder how that must be.
That must be
somewhat more. Well, no, I'm just thinking about it. So, like, that must be somewhat, like, not completely implausible. In a Japan-only MMO, like if it's a Japan-only MMO, that's a pretty small player base, I guess.
I think it's
not totally like if it's Japan-only MMO and you're in Tokyo.
Uh-huh.
It's not completely out of the question that if you're a nerd and your friends are also nerds and the people you interact with regularly are nerds, maybe. Like I'm just saying, it's not totally implausible.
Maybe like five people in your friend group.
I'm just saying.
It's anyway. It's completely implausible, but that's okay. It's still entertaining.
But yeah, so I like the show. It's very, at the beginning it didn't really, I watched it during Preview Guide, and it didn't really, I didn't really get its hooks in me too much. Like, it was cute and charming, like little rom-com and everything, but, you know, I wasn't like, oh, I have to see more of this, but, I had some time to watch something, so I decided to catch up on that, because it's kind of the other thing everyone's talking about that I'm interested in. I was interested in Kino's Journey until, y'all started telling me it was bad. Yeah, so this was the next, and I'm just watching Ancient Magus Bride. Next time I'm going to catch up on Land of the Lustrous. So I caught up on MMO Junkie, and I like it a lot. It's cute and charming. I'm curious to see, you know, what happens next and everything, but I am a little bothered by how much of the story leans on contrivance, and like how much, like, and it's not like clever or fun contrivance. It's just like this thing that's happening in the show right now is only happening because we need to drag the story out a little longer, otherwise we'll get to the end too quick, and that's what it feels like, and like that's what everything involving the other love interest feels like, is just there as a roadblock to what we know will eventually happen.
And not just a roadblock, but also, like, secret wingman. Because he's like, oh, I'm interested in Moriko, but he's not really interested in Moriko. He's just like,
yeah,
I'm going to act as sort of, like, secret wingman and also, like, inform you of our date together so that you will show up at the date and it'll really be a date between you guys, you know, that kind of thing. And it's entertaining and it's fun, but like the show, you have to kind of suspend your disbelief completely and just sort of embrace it as like this sort of cutesy farce.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's just like, it's a different appeal from kind of like the naturalness of their behavior, like the natural relatableness of, oh, this is exactly like me and exactly like nerds that I know, which a lot of it is, but the actual, what's happening in the story is like fucking noises off, like, and then he just happened to be there when this, it's very anime. So,
yeah. You know. But the good thing about it, well, there's plenty of good things about it. But I feel like the best thing about the show is how, real and relatable the main characters' feelings are about all of this. And how human the characters are to one another. Like, they do treat each other with a level of sort of empathetic kindness that I think is nice to watch. And, yeah, no, it's a good little rom-com. I have to admit, so, like, I'm sitting there watching it, and I'm like, this would be better as a two-hour movie. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it would make a really good live-action movie, especially if you set it in an MMO where you could have, like, action scenes and, like... Yeah. Big special effects spectacles, and you could cut the trailer out of those special effects spectacles,
yeah.
And have like a good ride. Like, imagine if the Warcraft movie were more like this. Mm-hmm. I feel like that would have been, people would have been like, whoa.
Yes.
I wasn't expecting this at all.
The world is for sure ready for an MMO rom-com.
Totally. I'm kind of surprised that hasn't happened yet in the U.S.
Like, shop around the corner style. They didn't know that they were party members.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's weird that that hasn't really been done.
Yeah. And you could make it really great, too. Like, if you came up with your own, especially if it wasn't an existing property, it was like a fake MMO that you came up with for this movie that looked like a CG cartoon, mm-hmm. you know? That would be great, I think.
Yeah, I think that would be really charming.
That'd be cool. But the show is very entertaining and charming. The animation is very, like, I noticed that they really don't show any of the game itself. Like, you don't ever see them really go on adventures. Like, not that much, anyway.
Yeah, well, people were laughing about how they were cutting corners in the first episode, so know from there.
But that's not important. You know, like, you're not watching this show for the animation.
Yeah,
so,
you're not. So.
It's cool. It's very cute, though. I think that if you are looking for something else this season, it's worth checking out.
Weirdly, like, the one contrivance that was a bridge too far for me, and I don't mean like, oh, it turned me off the show. It just meant like, okay, oh man, I really have to turn my brain off now. But like, because I like the characters and it's enjoyable. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, the show is bad now. It's just like, you didn't need to do this. I thought the story was strong enough that you didn't need to do this. But that not only do they know each other in this MMO, but the previous MMO, they both played together. I was like, all right, that's a bridge too far. Everything else I can kind of go with. Okay, yes, she knows like half her party members in real life, and yes, this love interest is actually just sort of secret wingman for the other guy. But like,
so I don't think it's completely implausible, and here's why.
Oh,
I've played a lot of MMOs, a lot of them, and it's not totally implausible. Again, if we're talking about Japan only MMOs, these people live in the same part of the country. They would likely, if they both have been playing and interested in MMOs this whole time, it's likely that they would have also been playing that game. They would have been definitely on maybe the same server if they're located in the same area, and you weren't allowed to choose a server. If it assigned you a server, they might actually just be assigned to the same server. Like, it is plausible. It's not because, like, I've had things like that happen before where I would run into people that I had known on, like, I ran into people in, what was the game? Some MMO I was playing. I played Star Wars Galaxies first, if people remember that.
Uh-huh.
And then, not necessarily guild members, but people I had partied with and had become friends with in Star Wars Galaxies. We did not choose to migrate to this next game together, nor did we organize it or anything, but I ran into them there. We happened to be on the same servers.
Uh-huh.
So I'm just saying it's not totally implausible, like.
But the thing is, you recognize them because of either usernames or something like that, and
yeah, this is
like because their gender and username of their characters was completely different.
Yeah,
they didn't.
But it's a romantic comedy.
Yeah, I know, but it's just like, oh wow, that's really a stretch. But I, you know,
most romantic comedies have stuff like that.
Yeah.
Going on,
and I don't
like
have a
crazy coincidence. Like,
yeah, I don't have a problem with it. It's just funny because it's like, oh, that is no way, you know?
Yeah,
but it's funny.
Yeah, Yeah, I don't know. It's a cool show. I also caught up on Ancient Magus Bride, of course. That show is, I don't know, stop me if I'm wrong, it seems like it's getting better looking as it goes on. Maybe I just really like the colors in the last couple episodes and the scene composition. I don't know that I'm not talking like necessarily just animation, but like single still frames and stuff look amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure they refined that stuff over time. I didn't notice an upturn in animation or anything. I think it's looked consistently good, but like,
I think I just like the visuals there. Like, I loved the fairy king and queen.
Yeah.
They were just spectacular.
Everybody can't stop talking about how Titania's, well, you know, it's like, oh, they move like real boobs. Because it's like, you know, we don't really have a problem with gargantuan anime tits. It's just like, could you make gargantuan anime tits that look like real gargantuan tits? It's like, oh.
Well, I liked the, yeah. Well, right. I mean, I liked the concept of their characters and their designs and their attitudes, and their scenes were really fun. Like, I.
Yeah,
I'm a little biased towards that kind of thing, but I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I liked their attitude toward the church and monotheism and stuff like that when they're confronted with it. It's not like, like most stuff in Magus Bride, it's not integral to understanding the story, but it doesn't feel like they just made up whatever to get these anime characters into the scene with the chosen girl. It feels like there's this whole thing going on, you know, hundreds of years back that we're not really privy to. Mm-hmm. And we just get like a glimpse into like how fairy politics work and shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, the story got a little complicated there for a bit, I don't know. I find myself, like, I'm just kind of passively, like, watching the story. I don't find myself particularly rooting for anyone, so to speak. Like, I'm not sure I'm sitting here going, like, gosh, I sure hope it works out for whoever. It's like, well, I wonder where this is going. Uh-huh. And that's pretty much my entire range of emotions.
Right.
Regarding it. Do you feel really strongly about what's happening in that show?
I mean, I do. It's always moment to moment. I just kind of want to be surprised. But
well, what do you hope happens? Like, do you have, like, here's what I hope happens in the story. Like, I want, like, what, where do you hope it's going?
I mean, just in terms of individual things. I mean, like, I hope the adventures kind of continue to surprise me and have, like, weird twists on Celtic lore that is, that's novel. It's not like, you know, it's not like the D&D fantasy stuff we're used to seeing. It's like, oh, this is like just old ass pagan stuff. So I like that. And just in terms of character dynamics, I hope that Elias and Chise have like a fight. There's like some sort of challenge between them.
That surely is coming.
Of course, yeah. I feel
people
like
who have read the manga, I'm sure, will tell us. But yeah, actually don't, because I'm watching the TV show. Yeah. I'd like to not be spoiled.
I feel like those aren't lofty expectations, but I hope that there's like some sort of like frightening or just sort of contentious rift between them. Not necessarily for long. Like, I hope they grow stronger through it, but I hope that there's like, you know, there's some sort of challenge between them.
Yeah. Yeah, I appreciated the extra story elements. It feels like every episode it answers some questions and then gives you a few new ones. Mm-hmm. Like, which is that's extremely careful writing. It's very carefully written,
right.
and paced out. And like, I'm not sure how many chapters they're doing like per episode.
They're like moving fairly briskly, from what I understand. They're not like rushing, but they're like. The people who are familiar with the manga have said nothing but like, oh, this is a good stopping point, or oh, this is they're handling the material like well without really cutting anything important.
Cool.
Without dragging.
Yeah. No, it seems like a really solid, good adaptation of that material. I'm thinking about going and reading the manga. Anyway. Okay, so
last note, I was like, what else is there? Oh, right. So I talked about, I think I there was a previous podcast where I talked about the cats. I don't remember, but I was like, oh, the cat. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I said something about like, oh, the cats are like a really neat articulation of, it's like a magical articulation of how actual cats act. Mm-hmm. And I liked that. That was also true of the dog. So when they added this, the black dog, you know, who guards the souls of the dead or whatever, like in life, before he became a mythical creature and was just a dog, they show you like he thinks that he's the girl he belongs to. He thinks he's her brother, and he also thinks that she understands everything that he's thinking and saying. Like, they're having a conversation, even though he's just a dog. And I thought that was really charming, and that was a really neat take on like how dogs might think of themselves. It was really cute.
Yeah. I liked the characterization of the dog a lot, and it was beautifully drawn.
Yeah, no, he's, you know.
All the scenes are really good. Like, those episodes, I thought, sometimes they veered a little too close to that feeling I was talking about earlier, where super powerful, mysterious bad guys, beautiful men fight over girl with who's actually more powerful than all of, like, yeah, it got a little close to that for me in some of those scenes, and
it is definitely of that genre.
I don't know why I'm so sensitive to that. I'm really, it's just like, girls. I don't want this. Nah, but that's not, like, that's, I think it's because it feels like such a blatant self-insert at that point. And it feels like it's just kind of a narcissistic fantasy at that point of me being the super powerful center of attention who actually doesn't really even want it. Like, that's an ego fantasy. It's not very appealing. And that's all I see when I see it. I don't get wrapped up in it. I'm like, ugh. So, that's the only thing about the show that gets to me, but it's so beautiful that that's a good show.
Bones. And now we have to pick between Bone Daddy and Dog Bone Daddy. My point is she seems to have two love interests now. Where'd this come from? One of them's a dog.
Do you think that they're framing the dog as a love interest?
No, it's that reverse harem thing of, like, he's not going to be framed by the story as a love interest at any point. But he exists in periphery to her as, like, a eligible bachelor that you can kind of...
You're talking about fandom now, not anything that's actually in the story.
Well, no, but stories are written that way in order to, you know, that reverse harems are written that way. Like, there's only ever going to be one endpoint, but, like, here's these other guys. I'm just saying, like, they could have made him, like, her familiar without making it sort of look romantic-ish, but they did because, you know, that's the genre. But
Anything you're watching that I am not, that is totally worth looking at? How's Blood Blockade coming along?
It's good. They're adapting. They're just adapting manga chapters, but the manga chapters are good. So, the most recent storyline that they've been, that they adapted was, sort of a little versus big thing of, there's a, well, how do I call it? How do I, explain this? There's, like, this little bitty tiny creature that shows up in Hell Salem's lot. Like, so he shows up in a mega spaceship, which is the size of an orange. He's like, this is our universe's largest spaceship, and he's actually the size of a microbe. And he, like, walks around inside of a giant mech that's the size of a flea that steps out of his orange-sized spaceship. All this to say that he's hunting down a microbe terrorists, and they're like, oh no, is it, like, you know, bacterial warfare? And he's like, no, he's a bacterium who is a terrorist. It's not bacterial terrorism. And so they have to find this terrorist who's the size of a, you know, microbe before he infects an organism that will make it grow to, like, the size of a planet and destroy Hell Salem's lot. So it's interesting. that's the kind of stuff that happens in, like, every episode of the show. It's just, like, a really interesting, like, silly sci-fi what if that lends itself to, like, a lot of jokes, but also really cool action and stuff like that. So
cool.
You know,
one of these days I'll probably sit down and watch Blood Blockade Battlefront, but I don't know. I think something about the writing on the show, for whatever reason, didn't quite grab me.
Well, you don't really like Nitao's
comedy.
Sense of camaraderie between bros, like, you mentioned something about that being a turnoff for you, like, specifically the kind of chumminess that they exude is, like, ugh, that's lame or that's corny to me.
It's the kind of performative, aren't we wacky together, aren't we a pair kind of thing that is, it feels very, I don't know, put upon, like, very, like, performative. So. Right. It doesn't feel genuine to me, I think. And it feels like it's written with this very specific type of fangirl in mind. And that's not me. I'm not that kind of fangirl. So it doesn't ring as genuine. I don't know. I don't think this is a legitimate criticism of Nitao's work. I'm just saying this is how it rubs me. And that's why I don't really like it.
Mm-hmm.
It also doesn't seem very deep. Like, he doesn't really, it doesn't seem like it really explores the friendship. It is just this kind of jokey, like, aren't we a pair sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. And I would, and I like that, but it needs to be in service of something else. Like, I do want that connection to be revealed to be deeper at some point, or, you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah. Now, yeah. He did that.
That can't be the entire point.
Yeah, no, I think he did that fully in Trigun, but in Blood Blockade, it's more of a comedy, and so, and the relationships between the cast aren't as complex. He's just sort of leapfrogging to new ideas.
Yeah, totally.
But I would defend the relationship in the bromance in Trigun is very complex, but Blood Blockade, not really. They're all, it's just sort of X-Men ensemble of weirdos.
Yeah, totally. All right, well, I'll get to it at some point. We'll talk about Land of the Lustrous next time. I'll catch up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to finally get a chance to sit down and watch that show. And I think I'm giving up on Zodiac War. I watched two more and was like, no. Never mind.
Yeah, it's bad.
It's not a good show. I don't like the... Like, what a neat premise, what a bad execution.
Uh-huh.
Oh, well.
Yep, that's what that, but basically everybody is saying. It's like, oh, what a neat premise and cool, wacky character designs, and you did what? Nothing with it? Damn, that's a shame.
Yeah, I think I might watch Inuyashiki, too. Are you still watching that?
Yeah.
Is it Gantz-erific?
It went from zero to Gantz.
I told you it would.
I
read those comics. Maybe I don't need to watch it.
Yeah, and I agreed with you. I was like, I bet it will, but like that first episode was so good, and yeah, it was. And the direction of the show continues to be really strong, but it's just Gantz. Well, it's just Gantz.
Everyone is fucking terrible.
It's not even...
Don't you want to watch him get ripped apart?
Yeah, it's not even that drastic. It's like it can't decide who the protagonist is because it...
Yeah. Because it knows that people aren't probably going to buy something that's just about this old man.
Yeah,
it
leaves him and just spends the whole time focusing on fucking Diet Light Yagami.
Yeah, so they can put him on the cover, I guess.
Yeah, but he's not interesting at all. He's just a sociopath. Like,
Diet Yagami.
Yeah, Diet Light. Yagami.
Yeah.
Oh, show that I don't know if you should watch it. Like, I would say you should watch it if you want to relax, because it's really good for that. Girls Last Tour has continued to really impress me.
Yeah. Okay,
it's
yeah.
Really,
all right,
show.
I'm going to write down Lustrous and Girls Last Tour.
It's a good season for anime. But yeah, I don't really want to describe anything about it, because I feel like that just sort of, like, the whole thing is just the atmosphere, so you don't really want to say what happens in it, because you want all that stuff to be a surprise. But it is really, really good, like... slice of life with just a little like philosophy mixed in there that's really natural. I don't know. It's hard to describe, but it's really, really well written, because that tone is really hard to hit. And so they did an excellent job of like capturing the atmosphere and
cool
tone of this sort of weird, unique little.
I shall watch it. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's talk a little bit before we take some Twitter questions. Probably kind of a short show this week. Before we take some Twitter questions, a couple of quick things. We could do, very briefly, we should do like an indie movie roundup, because you and I at this point have seen like a lot of the major Oscar contenders already. What do we start with? Lady Bird, mm-hmm. which, okay, we've seen four of the four. I can say you need to see, or you definitely should see, everyone I think should see Lady Bird, which is the Greta Gerwig movie. It's about a high schooler. It's extremely relatable. It has amazing performances in it. You will feel super seen. So, like, if you liked the game Night in the Woods, you like that level of fucking real. Fucking real, brah. Like,
right.
It's extremely real. Like, Lady Bird is, like, that kind of real.
Mm-hmm. It captures an extremely specific, like, moment in time and in life development, and is really good about all the details and all the naturalism of.
Yeah, 100%. Totally recommend that. And then also the movie Call Me By Your Name, which I don't recommend to everybody. Cinephiles pretty much only, I would say.
People who really, really like intimate character pieces. Quiet, intimate, subtle character pieces.
Yeah, this is the Armie Hammer, Timothy Chalamet movie about, I think I'm probably saying his last name wrong, about a sort of doomed fleeting romance between a grad student and I think he's 17-year-old Italian teenager in this one, like, sun-baked summer in Italy in 1983. And, like, I was kind of going in preparing to be like, because it sounded like the artsy-fartsiest, like, cliche, like, oh, let's watch a subtitled movie set in Italy about, you know, an older guy shut up and a younger guy. But It's fucking beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful, like, warm, intimate, like, incredible, incredibly well-made
very
movie.
Like, well-observed, naturalistic.
Yeah, and has this unbelievable sense of understanding and empathy to it, that this is a scene at the end of the film that contextualizes everything that happened, in my opinion, in such a way that really turned it into a revelation. Like, before, it was just kind of a beautiful film before that, but then the end was like, oh, wow, like, okay, this has a sensibility that you don't typically see in, like, LGBT cinema and, like, or any kind of cinema. Like, it's,
I was gonna say any kind
it's
of cinema.
Good. It's really a good movie. I don't know how it's going to do in the awards season, but it seems poised for victory in a lot of cases, and, like, it's a beautiful, beautiful movie.
Mm-hmm.
Last night we saw The Disaster Artist. James Franco.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
His Tommy Wiseau film.
Let's go eat, huh?
Yeah, let's, it's,
what's
the making
story?
Of the film The Room, the seminal 2003 film The Room, which I have seen a lot. I've probably seen that movie 10 times.
I think a lot of people have.
Yeah.
People listening to our podcast have almost certainly seen it.
Yeah, and if you have seen The Room, and you have fond memories of laughing at The Room, go see The Disaster Artist. You will have a great fucking time. But, like, it's a little weird that it's being talked about for, like, Oscars.
That's weird. So it is... It comes
is a
across,
fuck around.
This is a movie... Yeah, so this is a movie, like, in stark contrast to the first two things we mentioned, which are these really, like, you know, aesthetically strong... strong director voice, like, cinema kind of movies. The Disaster Artist kind of reads like a really long, like... comedy sketch where a bunch of comedian friends got together and made a movie. Kind of, it's one of those.
Well, it feels like that too, because mm-hmm. like there's a lot. It's a very kind of a party atmosphere sort of a movie.
Yeah,
it's. I wasn't expecting it to be as much of a trifle as it is, but it's hilarious, and like I really enjoyed it. Like I was enjoying. I had a big stupid smile on my face. You know, okay. So we saw this at the Arclight Hollywood, like, opening night, and you see anything at the Arclight opening night, and, like, so this movie is full of, like, every comic actor you've ever heard of in the last, like, 15 years.
Which lends to that aesthetic,
it's
right?
Huge, it's like, cameos. Oh, yeah, like...
this is a party for a bunch of these comedic actors,
yes.
You know?
And, like, this audience was clapping and applauding wildly for an appearance by, like, Jason Mantzoukas and, like, Paul Scheer and, like, you know... Nathan Fielder has a cameo, and like I was like, oh my god, it's genius Nathan Fielder. Yeah. I'm so happy and excited to see him in this movie, and
it's
so
Nathan
was the rest of the
me.
Audience. But like, yeah, but that's the kind of movie. It's 100% the kind of movie it is. You laugh your ass off if you have any appreciation for that whole thing, but you have to know it going in. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not for the uninitiated.
Yeah, yeah, they are not going to, like... This is not, like, the making of The Room in a way that sort of introduces it to you.
No.
It is, like, purely, we assume you have seen this movie and already, you know.
They literally just spend, like, 5 minutes after the credits roll. It's just like, here's the original, here's what we shot.
Yeah.
And it's super fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Hope you liked laughing at The Room 10 years ago, because you're going to do it again.
Unlike the first two, I'm pretty much in agreement with you on the movies. I think they're really, really brilliant and everything. This one I was a little torn on because I know too much about the story behind the making of The Room, because both when I was there, I was there on the internet during Tommy Wiseau's backlash to all criticisms and attempts to take down anyone.
No, I was too, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like a lot of people were, but I was like in the thick of it. I had friends who were being emailed by him under different aliases and stuff like that. And, you know, I'm John from theroom.com, and you need to take down this movie or I will sue you. It's like, you're Tommy Wiseau. Anyway, so... I forgot my last. Right. And I also read The Disaster Artist, which I would say is not only just interesting if you like The Room, but just in general, just as a human character study and like a really, what a story, Mark, like a really fascinating story, you should 100% read The Disaster Artist. Is a really, really, really good book if you haven't read it already. But my point is, I know too much about the story, so it was hard for me at some times, even though this movie is really entertaining and fun, it does feel like sort of a trifle, like, here's the broad comedy sketch version of how we think this might have happened. Even though we have the details, we're going to make this, like, sort of the fun, like, easy-to-digest version of events that is not even remote. Like, my point is, it's nothing like what happened. Like, it's not even close to how that movie was actually made. The things that they got right, the things that they carried over from what happened, are like little idiosyncrasies, like the fact that he bought all the equipment instead of renting it, and, you know, somebody fainted on set because he wouldn't give anybody water. That, like, details, basically. But the overall, like, the character arcs and motivations and the timing and the pacing of how everything happened is completely, completely fabricated. Which is okay. Like, it's the movie is really entertaining. That's not the movie's fault. It was my fault for knowing too much and going, okay, this isn't even a little close
to
no,
not necessarily, but it's just like you have to consider what's the movie's goal. Like, yes. What is the movie trying to do? And it succeeds at what it's trying to do, which is remind you of all the times you laughed at The Room, make you laugh, tell this crazy story in kind of a, you know, fictionalized version of it, and then give James Franco and his friends ample opportunity to fuck around. And Franco's fucking great.
Franco's
He's
really
incredible.
Good.
He nails, like, it's not just an impression. He really embodies the man. He really gets that stupid laugh. Ha 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 ha. He gets that so perfect. Like, it's and I laughed every single time he did it. Yeah. He does it like a dozen times in that movie.
Yeah, after a while, it's distracting at first because it's like, oh, that's James. That is very noticeable. That's very recognizable actor James Franco in a wig. But, like, he does such a perfect impression, perfect embodiment of
Tommy Wiseau's. He really gets the behaviors. Like, he really contorts his face and stuff. Like, it's. Yeah.
So it's like eventually you do forget, and it's like, oh, okay. What was distracting to me more is it wasn't James Franco. It really wasn't his issue, but it was Dave Franco as Greg. It was like, this is not even a little bit close to not only not what Greg describes as having happened, but like the person as in terms of basically Dave Franco plays the character that he plays, and I'm getting his name right. It's Dave.
Dave Franco is James Franco's brother. Yeah.
He plays the character like he plays characters in most of the movies that he cameos or co-stars in.
He's just a bro,
which is a happy bro.
He's a nice bro. Yeah,
it's a happy, like, easy to fool, naive bro. And it's as easy as it would to believe that that's who Greg was if he could be friends with Tommy Wiseau. That's not what happened at all.
Well,
it's hard to believe. Like,
so,
it's like, oh,
yeah,
okay, this
isn't
believable.
Yeah, I was reading a thing this morning. The Hollywood Reporter, I think it was the Hollywood Reporter, had a story up that was like, here's the entire original cast of The Room reacting to The Disaster Artist. And Greg said of Dave Franco, basically, well, you know, James really brought everything he had to this. And Dave really, you know, he did what he needed to do to really help James. You know, like, it was like, oh, yeah, no.
What I'm saying is Dave is the weak link, not only because he doesn't resemble Greg physically, but or personality-wise, because he's just acting like Dave, but also because it's just not really believable. It's like, I think people would befriend Tommy under different circumstances. And he did. Like, the story... The account explains why he befriended Tommy and what the relationship was. It wasn't like naive admirer of Tommy, because that's not a thing that existed. But, like, look, it's a really fun movie. It's really entertaining. I unfortunately knew too much about the real story and was a lot of it was like, this is the real account is more interesting. This is more like a funny trifle version.
I had very similar problems with the film Frost Nixon.
Right, that's a little more serious, my complaints aren't a complaint against the movie. I think that it could have been done better and more cinematically, but it's okay that it wasn't like, this is gold material. It's going to be entertaining if you just get the people right, and they got the people right except for Greg, so that's fine.
Yeah. No, it's cool. You should go see it if you will have a good time if you are familiar with The Room. The first two, definitely see. Disaster Artist, definitely, if you've seen The Room. Mm-hmm. And we also saw Three Billboards Over Ebbing, Missouri, which...
Outside of
it. I am an outlier on it and did not like it really at all. You liked it.
I appreciated it is a better word than liked it. I liked the third act. I did not like the first two acts.
See, I didn't. Like, and I've been having good conversations with this about this movie with my friends. So
good.
It has been like a really interesting movie to talk about, and it gets like a lot of good reviews. And there's been, although now it's starting to get snubbed in awards circles, so I don't know that it has much of a chance for Oscars. But
well, I was gonna say, like, even though I appreciated what the movie was going for, and I think it was unique, and I like ultimately I would fall, even though I don't agree with how a lot of it was written or shot, like. I would fall on like, oh, this was ultimately a worthwhile movie to make, and I think it had something strong to say, and you know, Frances McDormand like did a really good job, and that kind of thing. Like, ultimately, I would fall on the movie side. I do think, like, I do my best Woody Harrelson here. Is like, I don't think them reviews is very fair. Like, I think they were really way too praising. Like, 90-something percent, are you kidding me? Like, this is a troubled movie. Like, I'm surprised by how positive the critical reception has been this movie, because it's interesting and it's unique, and I think it definitely deserves to be out there and deserves to be discussed. It's very discussable. But right, for reasons that I won't spoil, but like, the praise is kind of ridiculous. It's a messy, messy movie, you know.
I didn't like it. I thought it was condescending and focused on the wrong things. And like, I don't particularly like the director's style. I really didn't like Seven Psychopaths, which was the movie he made before this. And then I think In Bruges, I liked it when I first saw it. On revisiting it, I really had a hard time with it and was like, why did I like this to begin with? And like, you know, I'm just not a fan of, like, he has this kind of obsession with like 90s style Tarantino dialogue and 90s style Tarantino violence, and
specifically like trying to deconstruct it, but not doing that right away.
Well, and not even fully committing to that, like, right, really not willing. Like, it's all having cake and eating too. And I don't care for that like 90s Tarantino aesthetic. It's really outdated, and I think it's aging poorly. Mm-hmm. It all seems like this kind of nonsense, kind of weak machismo stuff, like, fuck you, you fucking fuck, you know, yeah. This kind of like, here's my wise guy, witty mobsters, that kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. It's just so tired. Yeah. Like, it's tired, and it seems like it belongs on the shelf in like a Blockbuster Video in like 2001.
Yeah,
like a washed out cover, you know, like, I'm just not a fan. And this movie was more of that, except set in the Midwest and with this premise that allowed him to ostensibly comment on something, but it was, I don't know. I just didn't like it.
Yeah, no, I fully feel you. I feel like you could devote an entire podcast to talking
about
Martin.
Yeah, which I'm trying to get us back to that.
Yeah, I know. I'm just trying to wrap this up, but I entirely appreciate his aesthetic and what he tries to do, because literally nobody else makes movies like this guy. That doesn't mean that he makes great movies. It just means that he makes movies that are certainly not bad and often sometimes quite good. I would say Seven Psychopaths is interesting, not good. Three Billboards is good, but like good and interesting, but barely. And then In Bruges is just good. But nobody else makes movies like this guy specifically.
I don't know that that's like, in and of itself, like, oh, well, this is a reason to see this. Like, it's just different in the genre.
If you're interested in a creator sort of self-flagellating and asking questions about things that he loves but has problems with in his work, then I think it's interesting. But In Bruges is by far his best movie, even with this. Like, so it's In Bruges, Three Billboards, Seven Psychopaths, like, in that order, and all of them are kind of troubled movies. So I, you know, like, it's not like, oh, this guy's a genius. It's just like, well, this guy's interesting. And honestly, he's a playwright, and I miss, like, people that write movies like plays. I don't need that to be everything, but it would be nice if it was a little more often than it is. Than people who write movies just like an actual play, and are good at it. So, and I think he's good at it. I think he's a much better writer than he is a director. Like, that's the problem with Three Billboards. A lot of it is shot kind of pedestrian and not very well. There's a scene where without spoiling anything about the movie, there's a scene where a deer shows up to, like, haunt Frances McDormand, I guess. Like, it's just a deer in the woods, but it's showing up to bother Frances McDormand, and make her sort of question her vendetta. And it's shot really poorly. It doesn't look like the deer is ever in the shot with her. The lighting is really strange. The framing is off. It's distracting and off-putting and is bad. And it's like, a lot of the movie is like that. It's just not shot very well.
Yeah, I felt the exact same way. Mm-hmm. Call Me By Your Name, though. Yeah. That's a well-made
film. I would say if you liked the first, I would say just watching Bruges, because everybody should probably watch that movie. It's really good, and it was like an unexpected indie darling. And if you like that movie, then watch Three Billboards and see what you think of it. If you don't like it, then definitely don't watch Three Billboards. So yeah. The other two, everybody should see Lady Bird. And then if you like slow, intimate character pieces with like sort of gorgeous aesthetic, then you should watch Call Me By Your Name.
All right. Okay, good recommendations. Let's see. Let's take some Twitter questions. Land of Obscusion wants to know, with the news of Netflix producing an anime version of Goodfellas, do you think stuff like this is what the majority of Netflix's plan push towards make? Okay, first of all, that was a joke. Mm-hmm. That's not real.
Yeah.
Netflix is not making an anime version of Goodfellas. There is an account called Variety Film that deals exclusively in fake headlines that people retweet because they're funny, but they're fake. Mm-hmm. One of the problems with them is, if it's even remotely plausible, we get questions about it forever, about whether or not it's real.
Right.
People will think it's real. Mm. So it's not super funny to anybody who has to answer questions like this one. Mm-hmm. But he asks, do you think stuff like this is what will be the majority of Netflix's planned push toward... No. They've said what a lot of those shows are, and they're mostly just giving money to studios and letting studios make what they want.
Yeah, it's mostly like stuff that was already planned for production, and they're
just swooping in with the money and saying, okay, that's ours now. And they say, okay, because now we don't have to go through a production committee, and instead you'll just give us the money directly.
Pretty much.
And that's, well, we'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm. Also, I believe they have more time to produce things.
Which is good. That's what the anime industry
maybe
needs.
Well,
right
okay,
now.
But I shouldn't say that without being absolutely sure of it.
Oh.
So I'm going to look that up, I think, and do a little research. Let's see. Nikki Ancelotta wants to know. Our pal, Nikki, wants to know, MMO Junkie is a surprise hit of the season. Glad to have such a simple and sweet drama with an adult cast, but I was surprised to learn it's a fairly good adaptation of a webcomic and not a manga. Do you think we'll be seeing more direct webcomic adaptations in the future? I mean, yeah. Like, anything that has source material that's popular will probably get made at some point, right?
Yeah, well, they've been switching up to web novels, like self-published novels.
Yeah.
Like, King's Game was...
Anything with a premise that they can sell.
The interesting thing about web manga that jumps out to me is that so far... Now, this... I don't know enough about the industry or what it is to say if this is actually a trend or if it's just coincidence. But so far, the three or four self-published online manga that they've made into anime have all starred 25-year-olds and stuff like that in the workforce.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, is that a thing? Is that a lot of web manga, a lot of web comics in Japan are specifically about people in their 20s going through like a quarter life crisis or dealing with very relatable issues? Because that's what web comics are in America, so I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah,
you know, that's interesting, and I would be all down for more adaptations of that. Not only because Real Life and MMO Junkie are good, but it's like, oh, okay, I guess that's where we'll get our anime about young adults now. You know, if it's from web comic adaptations.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, like it just seems to me that production is happening at such a pace that if you have source material that's popular already and can be adapted into an anime, it likely will be. That's what it feels like, anyway. Uh-huh. All right, Stefan, our pal wants to know, any thoughts about the live action Pokemon film yet? I don't know. I mean, like in your estimation, Jacob. Uh-huh. What? Okay. Well, here's two questions. Uh-huh. One. What would you personally want? I don't mean from a business standpoint. I just mean Jacob's personal, what Jacob, he personally wants from a live-action Pokemon movie. What would you want to see? Let's say it's going to exist.
Uh-huh.
And what would you want that to be?
I would want it to be a live-action Digimon movie. Nah, I'm just kidding.
I was trying to trap you into giving me a direct answer to the question without a million caveats or like, here, let me rebend the question to not be that.
I'm not allowed to make jokes. You make jokes all the time.
I'm just trying to get a straight answer.
Okay.
Because I know there'd be a million
what
qualifiers.
What does Jacob Chapman want from a... Jacob Chapman wants what is not going to be made, which is like a... sort of metatextual, real world thing where everybody is like 20 people in their 20s and 30s who grew up with Pokemon and are, who grew up with Pokemon and are now like, you know, summoning and fighting with them, but it's like they have to, basically they have to treat that as like a real world ramification thing and they're treated like gangs, and maybe you accidentally sort of form a Team Rocket without really understanding that that's what you're doing. If you form one of those punk gangs, not like not like Team Rocket, which is more of a criminal syndicate, but like I want like a take on what if really Pokemon fans were able to summon Pokemon in the real world. That's not ever going to be made. So that would be, but that would be the interesting angle to me. As it like a kid's film, that's, I guess, like, it's impossible for me to imagine. Live action Pokemon to me is like live action Dragon Ball. It's like, this is kind of impossible for me to imagine, except as like a really broad, super commercial, like, kids movie that's not going to be super interesting to me.
I think.
So, like, live action Alvin and the Chipmunks, live action the Pink Panther, like, stuff like that where it's like, I don't, you know, it's weird. I don't think the original Pink Panther movies. I think the horrible Steve Martin movies.
Here's what I think you should make: live action kids family adventure movie.
That's tough.
No, live act. No, not Smurfs. Live action.
No, I'm talking about things that I expect this to be.
Like. Oh, okay. Live action kids adventure movie that commits deeply and very hard to a live action cartoon aesthetic that has a sort of pixelated effects for things like doors and computers and things that people interact with.
Oh, geez, that'd be interesting.
And the monsters are all rendered in soft, fuzzy CG, like Pixar fuzzy soft. So it's a human who maybe has a little CG augment to the way that they look. The world has a CG, sort of an 8-bit pixelated kind of look to it. The monsters are cuddly, soft, have that kind of a soft glow to them, mm-hmm. and it is an Ash Ketchum adventure, including Team Rocket. He defeats some gym leaders. There's a legendary Pokemon. The end. And that's what you make.
Oh.
Very straightforward. Brock, Misty, or Brock, and yeah, Brock, yeah, Misty, right. And Ash, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just make that movie, but commit to the aesthetic. Yeah. Commit really hard to the aesthetic. Uh-huh. Make the action scenes really good and clever. Uh-huh. And if you just made it straightforward like that, I bet you'd make a fucking killing. Especially if you really nailed like Meowth. Really nailed Meowth and Team Rocket and got the look exactly right and cast them just right.
I mean, if
and augmented the way these people look. Like, don't just put a purple wig on a dude.
Yeah.
Don't put a wig on Dave Franco and say like that fucking, it's James.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
Yeah.
Like, cast it right, cast the right guy, and then, you know, the look of it, I think, is maybe the most important thing.
See, I think that this movie is going to take place in the real world to some extent.
Yeah, yeah, right. No, the way that they're casting it and everything, I think that's probably maybe the direction it's going to go. It's too early to say. I'm just saying, like, in my head, that would be the coolest. That would be the most, but the thing that would make the most people happy and also be the coolest.
Yeah, that would be really interesting, like, just aesthetically. But, like, I think what they're doing, like, who knows what they're doing yet, but because it's such a, there's no reason for this to do this except commercial. It's because it just doesn't work as live action, to be honest with you. But like, it's such a weird thing that I think they're doing, which is live action, but in our world, but Pokemon doesn't exist. So they're treating it like instead of treating it like a cultural phenomenon, treating it like a foreign fantasy thing that's going to happen.
Yeah.
I think that's what they're doing, and that's boring. That's boring.
Like, in my opinion, it's set in a video game that they never acknowledge as a video game, ever. It's just,
yeah,
this is the world, and that they interact with things as though it's a game, and you see, like that, I feel like that, eventually someone will make a video game movie like that, and it'll be fucking rad.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be good. All right. After spending 20 minutes talking about Pokemon, and Cyber Mormon wants to know what sort of fairy, a la Ancient Magus Bride, would you guys pick to be your Magus familiar? Like a fairy or like an animal?
Well,
because a familiar is an animal, right?
Like, no, the black dog is a fairy. It's a fairies are sometimes like formed out of ghosts.
Right? Yeah. No. I guess that's kind of what I was getting at. So you pick an animal
that happened to once actually be a dog.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So are you picking a mythological creature?
I guess. Like I would have to think about that. I don't really, you know.
Yeah, I would have to give that some real thought, too. But
something I can fly on, be handy. Skip conventional modes of transportation.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's, you know, there are practical considerations, but then there's also a lot. Like, I have to decide, is it a practical or is it an aesthetic consideration? Like,
right.
Which is more important to me? Mm-hmm. Aesthetically, I feel like I would want, you know, I don't know. Well, that's a, boy, I don't even know. Like, I there's so many different things you could pick. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a wide-ranging question. I'm going to think about this, and maybe we'll circle. We'll definitely talk about Ancient Magus Pride again before the season's out, so mm-hmm. we'll have another chance to talk about this. But I'm going to put a pin in that one. okay, moving on. Josh Caleb says, sorry to get political, but do you have any idea if and or how the GOP tax bill will have on freelance voice acting for anime and games, seeing as it eliminates a lot of deductions? Okay, so sorry to get quote-unquote political, but that tax bill is an absolute disaster for virtually all of my friends and everybody right. who works freelance at all. If you live a Schedule C life, that thing is designed to take all of your money and give it to billionaires, and that fucking sucks.
Yeah.
So yeah, you should be worried for those people.
Yes.
Do what you can to stop it, folks.
Sorry to get dark, but them's dark times sometimes.
If you want to sit around and pretend like we're not living in extremely serious times, go ahead. But I'm not, and I will answer questions like that if I feel like it's necessary.
Right.
Anyway, Chris Adamson says, when fall season has too many good shows and not enough time to watch them, why don't some of these shows run at other times of the year? Well, they're all made by different companies who all want their shit to make money right now.
Yes.
So you get them all working in tandem and they'll...
That's not how the fiscal year
yeah,
works.
Yeah, they're not going to say like, hey, there's too much stuff for people to watch. We don't want to make money now. We'll make money next time.
Let's
they don't,
run this shit yeah, into the ground.
That's not how it works.
Yeah.
Tortoise Helmet says, hey, Zach, holiday season upon us and I tend to have difficult time buying anime-related gifts for my friends. Could you refer to some sites that would be good for purchasing anime-related products? Am I being set up here? Yeah. First of all, read the Anime News Network gift guide.
Yes.
Do it. No, it's a 2017 gift guide's up on the site. It's six pages worth of stuff for anime fans. Also, check out Tokyo Otaku Mode. That is the shop that is they're sponsoring the gift guide this year, but they have pretty good prices on shit and a good selection, and their stuff is actually typically in stock, so check it out. Right Stuff, you know, Amazon has plenty of this stuff as well. Ami is good for figures, but that's like a lot. Ami Ami is like a lot of pre-orders and like stuff that's not in stock.
Right. Yeah.
Tokyo Otaku Mode seems to keep stuff in stock a little bit better.
Just if you've heard about something just coming out in Japan and you're like, oh,
yes,
shit.
And yeah. Which is the place. Yeah.
Ami Ami will get like straight from the vein.
Yeah, definitely the place
but
to
it
go.
Depends on what you're looking for.
Especially for pre-orders.
Mm-hmm. If you're looking for something more, English language marketed and produced, then like Right Stuff will have it licensed and stuff.
All right. Swami asks, any chance you'll check out Persona 5? I did. I bought Persona 5 and I have not really played it yet. I played about 4 hours of it and was like, oof, I don't know about this. I don't know if it's my kind of game. I like JRPGs, but the Persona series just never really got its hooks in me. Weirdly enough, I was looking at Persona 2 the other day. And I think I might play that one because the graphics are really charming and people say they don't, you know, the game's kind of hard
to
understand.
That's
where
you fight Hitler.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think.
I just bought a copy of Wolfenstein 2, so I'll have lots of Hitler killing to do. Lots of Hitlers to kill. So many Hitlers to kill. All right. Steve asks, have they ever done the reverse of Trapped in a Video Game? Like if an NPC was just teleported into the real world and stood in place for half an hour yelling his thoughts at strangers. They should do something like that.
That's a good, yeah.
They kind of did that with Recreators a little bit. A touch.
Yeah, only it was like, yeah, it wasn't a comedy.
It was a light novel.
It was very heartfelt. And no, it wasn't light. It was just an original project.
Hmm.
No,
it was sort of riffing on light novel characters.
Right, yeah. Well, and video game, like, so one of them is an NPC.
Right.
What's her name? Meteora, who is, like, kind of the secret... they acted like What's Her Name was the protagonist. She wasn't. Meteora was, like, really the protagonist in terms of the creations, but, like, she's just an NPC, so she just, like, has to find all... Everybody else is like, oh, what do I do about my like, world back home? And she's like, oh, I'm going to construct a new life for myself because I wasn't really given one, you know?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
All right.
I think it's a dramatic take on that. I think the just showing up and standing in the street and yelling at people one phrase is...
Will Park asks, is there a live-action adaptation of manga and anime that comes the closest to good? Most people would tell you Speed Racer. Well, okay, most people would not tell you Speed Racer, but people who are smart about this kind of thing will tell you Speed Racer is the closest to good. It's the closest to succeeding at what it sets out to do, which is be a live-action version of Speed Racer, and it is exactly that.
Yeah.
It commits to it 100%. I don't think that the movie's very fun to watch because it's really long, and there's long stretches of it that are not that are kind of boring to me, but it's still a pretty entertaining movie for the like the last third of it. I really love the end sequence of that movie. It's really good. good. I didn't hate Ghost in the Shell. It feels not like if though. Ghost if it feels like if Ghost in the Shell had a better script, it would have been fine.
Yeah.
They had the look film. Was the look was okay, but the script was not there. And the performances are kind of bland.
Yeah.
What's
his name is Bato was good. I feel like the best anime adaptations to live action have been Japanese, but even though those haven't been very good. Let me put it this way. You can argue whether or not we've had a good anime adaptation to live action. I think there's definitely leeway to argue that. We've never had a great one. Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, so, you're right. Yeah. We're waiting for the first good one. That'll be a good one.
And we've never had like a really good American one. I disagree about Speed Racer, but you're right in that accomplishes everything it set out to do. That doesn't make it a good movie.
You just didn't like it.
Adaptation.
You just didn't like it.
Yeah. I don't know that it was a good movie. It's a good adaptation
it's fine.
Of a thing.
It's a good movie. It's a good movie. If you watch a live action Speed Racer and you watch, you're like,
maybe that's
what else would you fucking want? What would you expect?
Well,
how would it be better?
Yeah.
How would it be better? Like, oh, there's no scene where
again, some
Spritel
things are not meant to
and
be...
Chim Chim is that his name?
Some things are not meant to be live action.
Stack up on each other and wear a lab coat.
Yeah, Dragon Ball Evolution could have been a lot better. However, is it possible to make a good like American live action Dragon Ball? I don't think so.
Just don't. Look of that show is just doesn't really translate to live
action.
Okay,
so that's my thoughts on Speed Racer. Is like okay.
Yeah, but it did. It was fine.
I guess, but is it even possible to make a good movie out of
like that?
I'm not
that
sure.
Movie's not
it's
aging
not,
very well. Like yeah, the effects like in it are not aging well. Yeah. It's kind of an eyesore now. But like it was a little bit of an eyesore when it came out.
Right.
But so is Speed Racer.
Right. So I can't say it's a good movie. I'm just like, all right, they took this thing that shouldn't have been turned into.
No one's asking you to give
really
it
well.
Best Picture, Jacob.
No, I'm not. But he's asking. He's asking a good movie, right? So
yeah.
I don't think there's been one.
Speed Racer is fine. There's nothing wrong. It's fine.
It's but
not bad.
It's not a good movie. If you knew nothing about Speed Racer the anime and you watched it, would you think it was a good movie?
No, probably not.
So no, there has not been a good movie.
But just like, okay, well, that was a visually inventive children's film.
Yeah. We got a screener of Tokyo Ghoul to accompany the review. I didn't write the review for that one, but I took a look at that, and it was really good. It suffers in the last act a little bit from some tone issues, and obviously the effects are kind of basic. But like as a horror movie, like it was actually pretty good. But like I feel like the best, most thoughtful, and most unique, like the Rurouni Kenshin movies and stuff like that, Japanese live action anime adaptations. Have been the best, but we haven't like had a great one. We haven't like had like a great movie. So.
Yeah, we have a review of Fullmetal Alchemist up on the site now, and it sounds like one of those. Like it sounds like a Tokyo Ghoul esque, or maybe like a Death Note kind of a situation. Not like a Netflix Death Note, but like a Japanese Death Note situation.
Japanese Death Note movies are not good.
No, but you know, truncated version of thing, famous moments on the screen,
yeah.
Popular Japanese actors cast, some CG involved, you know. I think Al is completely CG.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. It'll be screening plenty in the US. I'm sure I'll get a chance to see it. Yeah. Anyway, moving on. We gotta wrap up here pretty quick. Let's see. Branko Berkson wants to know, do you think Netflix's Devilman Crybaby will be more successful in its than other original anime because it comes out everywhere at the same time? I don't know. I'd be honest, like, I don't really know why Netflix is investing in Devilman specifically. It's not a particularly huge franchise in the West.
Are they investing in Devilman or are they investing in Yuasa?
If Yuasa was just like, I want to make Devilman, they were like, all right.
And they're like, that's a known property, and
sure. Like, okay, then I can see how it came together. But if it's like, oh, well, we want something that we know people in the West care about, Devilman's not it.
Yeah.
I'm really curious to see how it does. Like, that's definitely, like, it's weird to think about it, but that's, like, it's kind of art house. The Yuasa Devilman will probably, like, it's probably going to be fucking grungy as hell. Like, Devilman is gross as fuck, and, like, it's probably going to be a tough, a queasy sit. But... You know, it's Devilman. Like, I don't know how big a deal it's going to be.
Yeah, I just
don't have any... I have no history with Devilman being a huge thing to anyone except for, like, Gona Guy fans in the West, which is, like, I feel like I know all of
Look,
them.
Look, if people on Netflix... if our traffic suggests that people on Netflix are en masse, like, watching... Not en masse, like, other anime are getting more people watching them than this, but, like, are even watching that Cyborg 009 thing...
Yeah.
Then, I mean, like, just because it's on Netflix, like, then people will watch this Devilman thing, I think. Because, like,
you're right, but, like, it feels like in the community, it's very little discussion.
Yeah, but the art
that
for
doesn't,
it.
And that doesn't.
But the art for it, though, like, it just leaps off of the fucking screen at you. It's like, oh, okay, this is a watch me.
Yeah, sure.
So
I'm not disagreeing with you. I just, I don't know. I it's hard for me to predict. I think all that stuff is probably going to do fine. Right. We'll see if any of it really breaks out. Right. Okay. Is there a season or, as Mr. Stiv 13 asks, is there a season or year you can point to and say there was a breakout season or year due to X number of shows doing well, meaning revenue or ratings? I mean, I don't know about revenue and ratings, but you can say that, like, this year, summer. That was Titan, or that was spring, right?
Titan, it was spring, Academia. Not summer.
Yeah, spring was fucking enormous. Mm-hmm. Like, we're still like that. Like, that was obviously the high point of the year,
right?
In
terms of fandom and engagement,
and I think you could point that, like, the last couple years, this spring 2017 was major.
Yeah, it's spring and fall. It's always spring and fall. For the last couple of years.
But this year specifically, it was like every major franchise at once.
Yeah, had a thing.
You know, you can't, I don't think you can say, like, oh, well, spring, fall, when it's like you had Titan and My Hero Academia at the same time.
Oh, yeah, it was a big deal regardless. I'm just saying, like, when you pick seasons, if somebody's asking, like, what are the most, like, lifts all ships, everybody starts paying attention to anime again, seasons of the year, it's spring and fall.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay. 4DM wants to know, last question. Favorite individual episode of Ancient Magus Bride so far? I'm a sucker for the Kingdom of Cats. I like the Fairy King and Queen one. That was good.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can break it down into episodes so much as just, like, you know, stories or story arcs. But, like, the Kingdom of Cats thing was really good, especially at the end. And then, like... You know, Ruth seems like a good dog.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like, I don't know. It's hard to break down the specifics. I guess because his story was over so quickly and it was more exposition than catharsis, I guess the Kingdom of Cats just wins out over Ruth. But he is a good dog. So that was a good story, too.
All right. Okay. Fantastic. Okay. I think that does it for us. Thanks, Jacob.
Thank you.
All right. That's our show. Big thanks to Jacob.
Me.
To Jacob for stopping by.
For being me.
The things, yes. I mean that sincerely.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you're my husband. I better feel that way.
Yeah, well, you know, it's good to validate.
Absolutely.
I love you.
You're a wonderful co-host. I love
you
very much.
You're a good host.
All right. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check about it at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and YouTube. Leave us comments, reviews, all that stuff. It really helps the show out. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you all next time.
Bye-bye.